When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, this is The Rock Podcast with me, Denny Somach. Now, I'm a rock historian, producer, and best-selling author. On this episode, my guest doesn't need much of an introduction. I believe all I have to say is he's considered one of the greatest singers in rock and roll. Free, you know, All Right Now, Bad Company, The Firm with Jimmy Page, The Law with Kenny Jones, Queen, and a few solo albums. Yep, it's Paul Rodgers. He has a new album out titled Midnight Rose, and it's on the reactivated Sun Records, you know, the record label that Elvis recorded on, as well as Johnny Cash, Roy Orbison, Jerry Lee Lewis, Ike Turner, and many other legends. Paul talks about all these things and his recent health issues, which included two strokes. He's doing much better with the help of his wife, Cynthia. Now, I have interviewed him in the past a few times, so the conversation went like this.
Hi, Paul. I dressed appropriately, as you can see.
All right, Denny. Wow, nice. I like it. I like the T-shirt, indeed.
But is that the one that says Paul Rodgers on it?
No, no. Do they have one that says Paul Rodgers on it?
They certainly do.
Well, I got this at the actual studio. I went for a tour.
Oh, cool.
This is all they were selling there, so.
Okay.
So, just get a Sharpie and add it in.
My name is Denny Somach. We do the Rock Podcast, which is the number one podcast for classic rock.
Excellent.
I'm going to talk to you a couple of things. I think they may have told you, or we're going to talk about the new album, a few other things.
Absolutely.
So you can, you know, feel free to say whatever you want. So okay, I guess the first place, Paul, tell me, you know, you got the new album out, you're out promoting it, you're getting a lot of press. It's called Midnight Rose, and it's all original songs. First album you've done in how many years?
Well, they tell me 25, although I haven't been counting, and I believe them. Okay. It seems that long. I've been doing shows, you know, with Bad Company. I went out with Queen. I was doing solo shows, so I've been very busy doing that.
Yeah, I saw I saw Bad Company at the Hollywood Casino a couple of years ago. So
yeah,
that's a lot. But I've seen you over the years, and I've interviewed you a couple of times when you had solo albums out, like last century. So,
oh, thank you.
When you're with Swan Song, etc. Anyway, what do you want to tell me about this album? You recorded it in Canada, right?
I did indeed. I recorded it in Canada, just locally at Ray Roper's studio. He's a great guitar player and an engineer, you know, a studio engineer, and he has his own studio in his house. During the lockdown, I was sitting around the house with a guitar because there's nothing else to do, really. Right. And so I put all my material that I had in my mind together. I wrote a few new songs. And I thought, you know, I could probably, I'd like to go in the studio and just see what happens when I do that. So I called my rhythm section up from Vancouver. And that was, that is Todd Ronning and Rick Fedick. That's the bass player and the drummer. And I said to Ray Roper, how about we get in the studio and just noodle around and see what we come up with. So there was four guys in the studio just blasting away. There was me, there was a singer, me, a bass player, Todd Ronning, a drummer, Rick Fedick, and a guitarist, Ray Roper. So we just, that's all we were. We weren't trying to make an album. We were just noodling around, but it turned into an album pretty quickly.
Did you have a backlog of songs over the years, or were these all written specifically for this album?
Well, I did have a backlog. Actually, I had a few songs that were on my mind and I want to get them out. And, you know, in a conversation with music conglomerate Primary Wave, who own Sun Records, right, when they asked what I was doing right now, I said, well, I'm just in the studio, you know, noodling around. And they said, well, when you get through noodling, give us a call. We'd be very interested. Sun would be very interested in releasing those tracks. And I was like, wow, really? Sun Records. So that gives that gave me an incentive to like, well, let's think about making an album here. So anyway, here's Midnight Rose.
All right. Well, that leads us to my next question, which what drew you to Sun Records? Obviously, everybody's drawn to Sun and Chess and the legendary names, but you're the first rock artist signed by the reactivated label, correct?
Well, do you think so? Ian Hunter released something just prior to myself.
Okay.
Hunter from Mott the Hoople,
yeah,
who gave Nick Ralphs, who was a wonderful guy. So it's all, you know, all in the family.
Okay. Did you, had you been to Sun Studios, the original in Memphis?
Well, you know, I've done interviews earlier where I've said that I have never been there, but when I think back, I have. And they did show me the studio, and there's a crawl space or what, something underneath.
Right.
Like, and they put a microphone down an old, like a hole in the ceiling, right? And they put an amp down there and they'd get a fantastic echo, which they used on a lot of their recordings. I was fascinated by that because it's so organic, you know, and it's such a magical place.
Yeah, I mean, I know over the years I've talked to people that went to record or just to see it, the Yardbirds and people like that, who just like wow, couldn't believe they were there, you know. So
yeah,
it is an attraction. Now, I want to talk to you a little bit, obviously, about your career. People know you were in Bad Company, you were in The Firm, you were in The Law, you had solo albums, you have a long history on Atlantic, which we're going to get to in a minute. But before all that, you were in Free. And I didn't know this because I guess, but for a long time, you weren't doing All Right Now in your shows. Is there a reason for that?
Well, you know, I thought the people were tired of it. And I was doing a blues tour at the time, and I had Jason Bonham on the drums and a number of great musicians. And Jason is a big Free fan, and he was always trying me to get to, you know, let's do Fire and Water, let's do Wishing Well, and let's do All Right Now, you know. And I was forever saying, no, this is a blues tour. We're just going to stick to the blues, because I had the Muddy Waters tribute album out at the time.
Right.
And I wanted to focus on the blues, right? So, you know, one night we were in this club. I can't remember where it was, but it was fantastic. It was packed. And there was Jason going, let's do All Right Now. And I said, no, this is a blues tour. Again, I've repeated myself. And the front row picked up and the audience picked up. Yeah, do All Right Now. So there's only me standing in the middle of the stage going, okay. I said, okay, let's just do it. And we went into it and it just ripped it. And we hadn't done it for like 6 years or something, actually. And it was so fresh and new at that point, because I hadn't played it for 6 years. It took the roof off the place. And so I left it in the set.
What do you think about all the commercials that use that song? Because there's a lot of them, as you know.
Well, there are. They get permission, or they ask permission to do that. Although I did have to call Chris Blackwell up at one time because there was a shoe odor advertisement. And at the end of it, it said it was, you know, now that you've sprayed your feet with this odor deterrent, everything was all right now. I said, Chris, you've got to take that out. We're not allowing that. So that was stopped immediately.
Right.
But, you know, generally, I think it keeps the music alive.
Okay. Now, a few years ago, you did the Free Spirit tour where you did all Free songs. What inspired you to do that? Do you think Free was underrated, didn't get the recognition that they should have?
Well, you know, they're getting it now. It's strange. It's really stood the test of time, you know. And the guys I was working with at the time were Deborah Bonham's band, Pete Bullock, and the guys there in her band. And we used to do, we used to play together, and they played the Free stuff so well. I said to them, like, one day we'll do a tour of England playing this material. And one day, that day came about. And I called it Free Spirit because it wasn't actually free, but it was definitely the spirit of free.
Right.
And it was a it was received so well in England. They just loved it. It was kind of my tribute to the band itself, which was a great, great little band.
Now, I know, obviously, there's a couple of guys missing, but before that, had you thought about reforming Free, like in the late 70s, early 80s at all?
Well, when I left the band, Paul Kossoff was a great and together guy, I have to say. He used all the driving, he used to drive us around way up north into Scotland and up there, and then jump out of the car and get on stage and do a show. He was so together. But after the band split up, he went down very quickly, I'm afraid. And there were drugs, and unfortunately, and so the band got back together. I spoke to Andy, Andy spoke to me. Let's get the band back together because we've got to help Paul Kossoff. We tried that, and it kind of didn't work because he was a little bit too far gone. I was very, very shocked and upset that we couldn't actually help him out. But in those days, you see, you didn't have the rehabilitation that you have nowadays. There's all kinds of, you know, organizations to help people that have got caught out with drugs. And, you know, unfortunately, we couldn't help him. So we didn't really come back together again beyond that much. Yeah.
Okay. I think we just passed his birthday a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
What was it about him, though? Because people revere him. I mean, they revere Free, obviously. You got the band Mr. Big, which named themselves after that. You got guitarists like Eric Johnson, who just revered Paul. What was it about Paul?
Well, I met him when he was with a band called Black Cat Bones. And I actually had my own band called Brown Sugar at that time. And we were playing in a, you know, in a pub, in the back room of a pub. And Paul Kossoff turned up and said, I'm going to get up on stage and jam. Is that okay? I said, yeah, certainly it's okay. And we got together and he got up on stage and we played, I think we played B.B. King's every day I have the blues, like that, 4 o'clock in the morning and I'm sitting here waiting on you. We did Stormy Monday, which was amazing, actually. Right. It was a great player. And afterwards people came up and said, you know, when you guys played together, time stood still. Now, I hadn't heard that said of anybody but Clapton at the Marquee. And I thought, well, wow, that we've got something. And I said to Paul, we should form a band. So right then, that was when Free was formed.
Is it true that you wrote All Right Now in 10 minutes?
Well, it was...
Were you and Andy? You and Andy wrote it? Or?
Yeah, the thing was, I said to Andy, we were putting as much new material into our set as possible because we were a blues band originally. And I said to him, you know, we should try and phase out the blues and just have our own material because then we have our own voice, right? We have our own personality. We have our own message. And it's our lyrics, you know. And he said, yeah, let's try and do that. So we went for that. But there was one song we could not leave out, and that was called The Hunter by Albert King. And it was such a good song. It was so well loved. We couldn't get off the stage without playing that. So I said to the guys, we need a song that is at least as good as that. So something really simple like, all right now, you know, like that. And I said, yeah, well, let's make that the chorus. So Andy took that away and came back with bam, boom, bam, bam. And so I needed to write the lyrics for the song, you know. So I said, well, you know, it's a boy meets girl. How do we get to all right now? What happened before that now is all right? And I said, well, there she stood in the street. What was she doing? Smiling from her head to her feet. Yeah, that's a good smile. I said, hey, what's this? Maybe she's in it. You know, the lyrics just flowed out. So in that sense, it was quite quick, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I know in the UK, Bad Company came about. You signed to Island. But in the States, you signed to Swan Song, which is distributed by Atlantic. How did you get to Peter Grant?
Well, it's a long story. I'll try and cut it short. We had a guy it was a road manager, and he drove us with Free, and it was called Clive Coulson. He left the band, he left us, and he joined Led Zeppelin's team, right? So he then knew Peter Grant. And when we had split up and I was with Mick Ralphs and we were writing songs together, thinking about Bad Company, et cetera, et cetera, Clive came round and said, you need to call Peter. He's very interested in you. And I said, well, I don't think so. They're like, you know, gods of rock. He was not going to be interested to me. So I said, no. He said, no, call him up. He's definitely interested. And he came around a couple of times while we were rehearsing and said, yeah, you need to call Peter. I said, okay, I'll call him up. And I called Peter and I said, hey, Peter, I hear you, you know, you might be interested in what we're doing here. He said, well, I'm interested in you. And I said, well, Peter, I come with a band and we're called Bad Company. And he said, well, I don't know about the name. But he was interested and he came around to rehearsal and the rest, as they say, you know.
Yeah. It's the coming up on the 75th anniversary of Atlantic. And I assume that over the years, you've met Amit and you've met a lot of key people. Can you recount the first time you met him and what kind of a record man he was? Because so many people talk about him.
Well, I want to tell you a little story. The first record I bought was on Stax, which is an independent label, was distributed by Atlantic. You probably know that.
Yeah.
I bought Booker T and the MGs, Red Beans and Rice. Now, Booker T was Otis's backing band in the studio. Otis was my man. I loved Otis. I still do. I've still got his records. I've still got a copy of Red Beans and Rice. And on that record, there's a song called Respect that Otis did, that Otis wrote and did. Now, also, Aretha Franklin did a version of that song. And it was from his respect was from the point of view of a man. Her respect was from the point of view of a woman, which, of course, you need mutual respect in any relationship. And Amit loved Chinese food. Whenever he came to London, we would go and he'd take us out for a Chinese meal and we'd sit around and talk. And he said, he was telling me about Otis and how when he played Aretha's version of Respect, R-E-S-P-E-C-T, you know, she put that bit in. His words were, the little girl done took my song. So, you know, it was a wonderful insight into, you know, the personal feelings that Otis had. And it was great. Amit was a fantastic guy. He was a really good friend, actually, I've got to say.
He was a real music guy. I bet you had some great conversations musically.
We did, yes. Well, of course, he's very knowledgeable. And I was like, you know, I'm not very knowledgeable, but it was really great to talk to him all the time. Yeah.
So you probably had a common thing with him, but love of the blues, love of R&B, that kind of stuff.
Well, yes. I mean, where was he from? He was from Turkey, wasn't he?
His father was the Turkish ambassador to America.
I know. All this stuff I found out later because he was like real gentleman telling me stories and the head of the record company, you know. So all this other stuff I found out about him, like what you just said, and he was a very powerful person. So it was great to know him. Yeah.
Okay, so Led Zeppelin, Bad Company, yes, Rolling Stones, Foreigner, Genesis are considered like the peak of classic rock. They were also all Atlantic artists. What do you think that during your period, what were the highlights of your career in all the different bands that you were in at that time?
The highlights, there have been so many. I think one of them was the release and the success really of Bad Core, the Black Album with Bad Core written on it. That was so wonderful because we were we were definitely a fledgling band, you know, and trying to get ourselves heard. And Led Zeppelin and Peter Grant gave us, and Amit and Atlantic, they gave us that opportunity to be heard, which was all the most that you can ask of anybody, you know, is that people hear your music. So we recorded this album at Headley Grange, and even that recording was due to Peter Grant and Led Zeppelin. They had this old mansion in the country set up for a Led Zeppelin album, and they were delayed by 10 days. And Peter called me up and he said, now listen, Paul, we've got 10 days, you can have this studio for 10 days, you can maybe put a couple of tracks down, right, see? So I said, okay, guys, let's get out there. And we went out there, it was a big old place, set the drums up in the lobby, in the staircase, it was a good echo there, you know, right. It was all marble and stuff. And to set the guitars in this room and the vocals in that room and something on the veranda. And we set it all up and played there. We had Ronnie Lane's mobile studio outside. And we just went for it. We recorded the whole album inside of those 10 days.
Isn't that so, where the famous When the Levee Breaks was recorded, the drums?
Well, I guess it was, you know, because...
because of that stair. I've heard that story that it was just the echo. It was just perfect for drums.
Yeah, it was perfect. It was beautiful. In fact, we sort of used our drums in there too. But, I mean, there was a black dog that hung around the house. And we used to kind of take care of it and give it scraps and stuff like that. And one day I found it lying in the lobby, breathing very difficult. And I called a vet, and the vet came and he said, he's got a twisted bowel and I can put him down, but, you know, Costa, it's hopeless, really. I should put him down. And I said, well, okay, can you please do that? He said, well, somebody's got to pay me. I'm sorry. And I said, well, how much? And $5. You know, I said, well, please do it, you know. And later I told Jimmy about that. And he said, was that that's a black dog. That's the black dog that they used in the title of one of their songs.
Right. Okay.
The actual black dog, yeah.
Now, for a brief period, you were playing with Queen. How did you like that?
Well, it was a wild ride. It had been a wild ride.
When they first approached you, what were your thoughts?
Chris Blackwell was being celebrated on a TV show, and both Queen and I were set to play on that show, and I was going to headline the show and play All Right Now because it was such a big part of Island Records, you know. And I said, yes, I'll do that. Then I spoke to Brian, and he said, look, we'll be your backing band for All Right Now. And I said, well, that sounds good. Queen is my backing band. That sounds great. If you'll be our singer for We Will Rock You and We're the Champions, because we're going to do those songs on the show. And so we did that. We got together for those three songs, and I found it was really good. So when Brian called me up and said, how do you fancy doing a couple of dates in Europe just for fun, Queen and Paul Rodgers? And I now knew that it worked because we'd done these three songs and there was a connection there. You know, they right. did a great version of All Right Now. And so it turned into 4 years. And now, I joined the band for 4 years. And we did the world tours twice. And then we made a studio album. So at the end of that, I said to myself, you know, I've got to get back to my own music. And that's why I left, basically.
Now, I think somebody told me this. One of the songs, I don't think you recorded it with them, but one of the songs you did live with them is on the new album?
Yes, I was still working on Take Love, and we did do a couple of versions of that live because I wanted to see if it had what it took. But I wanted to keep it for myself, and we didn't put it on the album. So that's and that does appear on Midnight Rose.
So you're sort of the lead singer that everybody wants for everything. It's always been like that. So confirm for me that you were asked to be the singer in The Doors and Deep Purple.
Well, I was asked by Deep Purple to join them after Free had split up in Australia. They did call me and I spoke to all the members. But by that time, I was very interested in forming a new band. I wasn't really interested in joining a band. And so I declined because I wanted to get together with Mick Ralphs and all the rest of the Bad Company. And with The Doors, Robbie Krieger. When we later, much, much later, we played with The Doors, a version of The Doors, obviously without Jim. and Robbie Krieger said to me, when Jim died, we all got on a plane because we didn't know what to do. We came over to England and we were looking for you. I said, well, why? And he said, because we wanted you to join The Doors. And there's a picture of me going, what? So I didn't find out until a long time later. And I don't know what my answer would have been.
But Danny, there was also the Doobie Brothers wanted Paul to join.
You want to introduce Cynthia?
I'm here. Hi. Yeah. When Tommy Johnson had to leave the Doobies for a bit, they were interested in asking Paul, but he was already into Bad Company.
Yeah. Right.
And also before Neil Sean formed Journey.
Oh yeah, he sent me all. That's right. Thank you, sweetheart.
You're welcome.
He sent me all this information. He was going to form a new band. He was going to call it Journey, and would I be interested in singing? But again, I was too, you know, committed really to writing songs with Mick Ronson and seeing that where that would take me.
Is there anybody that you ever considered or still maybe wanted to sing with that hasn't asked?
Oh, I haven't thought about that. No, not particularly. No, I mean, you know, people have asked me what would my supergroup be, and it would be like Jimi Hendrix, you know, John Bonham, you know, and probably maybe Boz, maybe Andy Fraser, I don't know, a bass player, a good bass player, maybe Todd Ronning.
Yeah. Couple more questions. What plans for the future now? You going to tour?
No, I don't have any plans to tour at this point in time. I've done that before. I've come off stage and I haven't, I didn't tour between, when didn't I tour? For a good 5 years after I left.
Yeah, how's your health, by the way?
Oh, it's great, actually. Thank you.
I meant to ask you that when we started, and I forgot.
I've had some health issues.
Yeah.
Are we talking about them, sweetheart?
Yes.
Yes. Well, I had a stroke, yeah. And I had a heart issue, or two strokes. I don't count them.
Yeah, he actually had 11 TIAs and two major strokes that penetrated the cerebellum pretty deeply.
Yeah.
And then,
it's funny. I met Levi, the singer with the Four Tops, and he'd had a stroke. So I'm so lucky.
Don't tell me the Four Tops wanted you to sing lead too.
Well, I did sing with them. They wanted me to come out and do a couple of songs on their, when it was celebrating 40 years, I think. 40th anniversary. And it was a beautiful thing because their manager said to me, well, the three, while you're singing, I sang, what did I sing?
Loving You Sweeter.
I forgot what I sang.
Love Music.
Love Music, yeah. Obie's song. We need more love music. All that stuff. It was a great song. It is a great song. And they said the three other guys, the three survivors, may come out and join you. Well, they did. And I was,
it's on
a DVD, yeah. And it was such a, the backing band that was just so great. And they did come out and it was just a fantastic moment. But, you know, I met Levi and he's in a wheelchair and it was nonverbal. And I've been there. I was nonverbal throughout my stroke as well. So I could understand, I didn't understand then, but I do now. And I found myself standing beside him in his wheelchair at the after show party. And I looked at him and he looked at me and I thought, what should I say? And I said, there's nothing I can say. I can sing him something. So I went, the long and winding road that leads to my door, to your door. So I sang that song a little bit to him. His eyes were just lit up. It was so beautiful. And I said, you sang that. You did a version of that, didn't you, Levi? And he nodded because that's his, you know, that was his way of communicating. And it was such a beautiful moment. So, but basically what I'm saying is, you know, I know the dangers of stroke and hyperbarics has been very helpful. That's oxygen under pressure. That brought me back to life and brought my brain back. It's so brilliant.
Yeah. We also did a therapy called NED therapy. It's an intravenous naturopathic therapy. And what it does is it increases the production of the body's mitochondria, mm-hmm. which yeah. over time they deplete.
Cells, yeah.
yeah. And that really helped Paul. And then we had to work with a speech pathologist. He lost his speech.
Yeah.
His right arm was directly up in the air. So I brought in a reflexologist to the hospital and she worked on his feet and that lowered his arm. It never went back up.
Yeah, that's great.
And he did have to have an endarterectomy where they open up the neck because the left carotid artery was blocked. And that was the problem.
Yeah.
So we're very lucky because going from nonverbal and having to relearn everything from brushing his teeth to how
time
to eat.
Shoelaces.
Yeah, everything. Yeah. So he's back 95% and we're happy.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So before I get to my last question, since you started singing The Long and Winding Road, did you ever see the Beatles play?
No, not live. No, I saw them on the telly like a lot of people, but I loved them and I still do. And I don't think they get enough airplay right now. I'd actually love to do my own Beatles tributes, but that's another story.
But you worked with Ringo, didn't you, on something?
Well, Simon Kirk has. Yes, I have worked with Ringo. Yes. Yeah, he's an amazing drummer because he's left-handed and plays a right-handed kit or something, you know. So it gives him a natural quirk anyway. So he's had such a great feel. You know, with the Beatles, it's always high in the air. It's never four to the four, boom, boom, cha, boom, boom, boom. It's always, it's always, you know, really amazing, really original.
Okay, I'm going to let you go, but I'm going to ask you a final question because I ask a lot of people now. What's in your record collection?
My record collection. I have Holt's Planet Suite. Da 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 da. I love that record. I have Otis Blue. I have lots of Howlin' Wolf. Lots of Otis Redding. What else do I have, sweetie? Albert King. Elmo James.
Yes, we know he has that, and I'm sure.
The new edition. Apparently, this Paul Rogers guy is not too bad, so I've got that.
Okay, well, listen, I want to thank you for doing this. In fact, I don't know if you know this, but I'll tell you a story. I know David Spiro very well for many, many years.
And yeah, great guy.
His father, you know, had a TV show. Did he tell you the story about Otis Redding babysitting him?
I think he might. Did he tell us?
I don't think so.
Ooh, he's keeping secrets from us.
Ask him about that. Tell me, you got a question from Denny Somach, and he said something about Otis Redding was a babysitter for you one night.
Oh, man, yeah. Well, I can believe it because...
That's what happened to DS.
Yeah, that's what happened to DS. Yeah, man.
Anyway, thank you very much for taking time. I know you had a very busy schedule. Good luck with the album, and hope to talk to you again soon sometime.
Okay, beautiful. Thanks so much.
Thanks, all Paul. Right. Thanks, Cynthia. Okay.
Thanks, Denny.
That's our chat with Paul Rogers. His latest album is Midnight Rose and available everywhere. Thanks for joining me on The Rock Podcast, the number one podcast for classic rock conversation. Some taken from my archives and some new, like today. Please get in touch by writing to me at hello@therockpodcast.com. Watch this interview on YouTube. Sign up to our channel. It's free, no charge. In fact, there's no charge no matter what platform you get your podcast from. See our Facebook page. And I want to thank our sponsor, Authentic Rock Collectibles. Check out their website as well. Until the next episode of The Rock Podcast, this is Denny Somach, and that's it for now.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.